And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, I think that the primaries last week, in Pennsylvania anyway, had some useful and significant information, at least on a statewide level, as it relates to one district of the House of Representatives that had kind of an overwhelming influence in what's going to happen in the state, right?
Yeah, it was an open seat because the Democrat had to resign for a sexual impropriety scandal type of thing. And it was in Delaware County, which as late as 10 years ago, maybe even less, was a heavily Republican area. Those collar counties around Philadelphia had, and many of them had not been gone Democratic since the Civil War. Things have changed. And it went for Biden, this district, but the Republicans thought they had a shot, and apparently the Democrats did too.
In fact, a week before the election, didn't you tell me that according to the polls, the Republicans were way up?
They were. That's what I was told, that it was the Republican looked good. The poll would have been 2 weeks before the election. And the Democrats threw in a lot of money. Reportedly, they threw in $1 million. The Republicans only threw in about a tenth of that. So maybe their polling was better than the Democrats, and say, we're not going to waste our money. But anyway.
Well, maybe it was worse. Well, maybe they believed that they were so far ahead it didn't matter.
Maybe. But anyway, Josh Shapiro put his political capital on the line and cut an ad. And the ad was strictly about abortion. He said that they would help or prevent the Republicans from doing anything on a constitutional basis to prevent abortion. And it was a well-done ad. And then because I was in Philadelphia over last weekend, I also saw an ad that attacked the Republican for her financial woes, saying that she had declared bankruptcy twice, she was being sued for not paying bills and things like that. And in the end, it wasn't even close. It was a 20-point win. It was a 60-40.
How many? A 20-point win?
It was 60-40, which kind of paralleled what Biden had done. So the Democrats now continue to hold the House of Representatives.
So what does that mean for the state?
Well, it means, number one, that the Republicans can't do bad things coming out of the state house, and they can't get constitutional amendments or proposals on the ballot, because those things work around the governor. The governor can't veto those things.
So to get the constitutional amendment on the ballot, both houses have to vote that it should be on the ballot.
Twice. They have to go through two legislative sessions. Uh-huh. They got through one, and they got through the Senate the second time, but now they can't get through the House.
Right.
As long as it stays Democratic for the next year and a half.
So what are the chances of that happening?
Well, pretty good, but we keep having all these sitting members of the House of Representatives resigning for other offices. Out in Pittsburgh, there was a race for what they call the county executive. This is the person who runs the county. And a sitting member of the Democratic House won that race. So she is going to have to resign after the November elections. And I heard that there may be one or two more that may have run for other offices, local offices. I'm not sure. So the Democrat, but they're all Democratic seats, but the Democrats are going to have to keep going through all these special elections and holding them. So that's, but it's still, right now we're into the budget process. They have to have a budget with a little bit more than a month, so that it gives the governor and the House of Representatives a lot of leverage against the Republicans who control the state Senate. There are going to have to be compromises made, but they should be able to come to something, hopefully. Although the some of the Republicans in the state Senate are, you know, these diehards who will take everything down with them. One other
in past budget negotiations, when Corbett, the Republican, was the governor, there were these really draconian cuts to the school budget. And how does that stand? Has that ever been recovered?
No, but it's starting to recover because of that Commonwealth Court ruling this year that said that the schools have been underfunded, these districts. So they have to come up with more money. It's in the Shapiro budget. It's not back to where it should be, but it's getting back to where it should be. You know, some of the legislators are going to be under pressure from the local school boards, because anything that isn't paid for by the state has to be made up locally.
And our Lackawanna County School Board had a big upset, right?
Yeah. The Scranton School Board.
Scranton School Board,
Before we get to that, I want to discuss a little bit more about the state. Because we had races in Philly and Pittsburgh, and both cities had been tracking more and more progressive, particularly Allegheny County.
That's Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. We saw Summer Lee get elected to the Congress from out there, and Philly also has elected a lot of progressives to the state House and the state Senate. But in the Philly mayoral race, the progressives put their chips on a woman named Helen Gim. The Soros Organization and Bernie Sanders came in with endorsements. And she came in third. It didn't work. A more centrist woman, the first woman mayor of Philadelphia, Cheryl Parker, ran a much more centrist campaign, saying we need more police. We have to take, put our own house in order. She won. The polls showed that there was about a 3 or 4 way close race, but she won fairly convincingly, you know, when there was so many candidates. She got over 30% of the vote. I think it was about 10 points more than Gim got. That one went a little less progressive there. We'll see how it pans out. Philly's an awful tough place to govern.
But Pittsburgh went just the opposite way.
Yeah, Pittsburgh kept going more. And the other race that happened in Pittsburgh was the longstanding DA, someone who's been there for a couple of decades, named Stephen Zappala. His father was on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, so the family's been a political power for years, decades out there. He lost. He lost to a progressive candidate. But the interesting part is he lost the Democratic primary, which is his party, but the Republicans are trying to get him through write-in votes to be on the Republican ticket. And how that's going to play out, I don't know. I was on a conference call, and one of my friends from out in Pittsburgh, who's active, was going to explain it to the group, and his computer froze.
maybe it can't be explained.
We got to the explanation because, you know, if they split the party on a statewide election, that could be, you know, very important. The Democrats control the big cities: Philly, Pittsburgh, Scranton. They're fairly strong in Erie, they have to have cohesion. And if you lose Pittsburgh, or if you lose a lot of votes in Pittsburgh, the Republicans might win. And don't forget, there's a state Supreme Court seat up for an election there. And by the way, the Republicans rejected the more radical of the candidates, the one who had gone with Trump in one of her rulings. She was out, but the one that they elected is no great liberal either, has had some very regressive decisions. So we'll see what happens.
But is this an election in which the Democrats are favored, the courtship election?
They should be, but you can't take that for granted. They want to keep at least the 5-2 majority in the state Supreme Court. 4-3 gets dicey, and particularly since 3 of them are going to be up for retention in 2 years. And they made all the difference you know, between the gerrymander that the Republicans had had, where they, when Pennsylvania had 18 congressmen, and it was an evenly split state, actually more people voted Democratic, there were, it was 13 to 5 Republican in the House of Representatives.
Let's say that again, because it's very clear. More people voted Democratic than Republicans, but in the national legislature, there were 13 Republican elected and only 5 Democrats, although the 5 Democrats had the majority of the vote of the state.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's called democracy.
Well, well, see what happens in Wisconsin and North Carolina the same way, particularly Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's with the power of gerrymandering, and the state Supreme Court, with a Democratic majority, undid that. And they redrew the lines, and the lines make a lot more sense. The districts are compact, they're cohesive. They keep counties together that have common interest instead of, you know, the one that we used to be in, where it ran from Scranton up to, you know, up to your area in the north, the border of New York, and across there, and then down to the middle of the state. It was an awful gerrymander, 14 counties or something like that. So, so that's
it was like Alaska. You needed an airplane to get from one part of the district to the other.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago there was a, another Supreme Court race. The Democrats thought they had a good chance. They did not get a good turnout in Philadelphia, and the Republicans won it. And by the way, you know, there was some big money, you know, the Jeffrey Yaz type money, the Commonwealth Fund money in the background of that race that came in late. And they expect that to be in that in this race as well for the Supreme Court. So we'll have to see.
Of course, Jeffrey Yaz is really primarily interested in school boards.
Schools, right, right. Privatizing the schools.
Right.
In essence, that's his thing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention that before we got back to Lackawanna County, which, you know, the big, well, for, we had the county commissioner race,
right,
which was interesting because the longtime Politico and county and two-term county commissioner, Jerry Notariani, who many people thought was, you know, would be there as long as he wanted to be there, he came in third. And is going to be out as a county commissioner.
Is the county going to suffer because of that?
I don't think so. The one of the people that's there is Bill Gaughan, who used to be the Scranton city councilman. So he knows government. You know, he knows the issues. He may not know the county government quite as well, but, you know, there are people there that'll help. And then the second candidate was the one I've been touting for a long time, and that was Matt McGloin, the former Penn State quarterback and Oakland Raiders quarterback, who had big name recognition. He's a newcomer to politics. We'll see what he knows about politics.
But he's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat. He came out and said, you know, a lot of these athletes are coming out and saying we're Republicans, not him. He's no Herschel Walker.
Golly, that's kind of an insult.
It's a low bar.
Yeah.
But anyway, so those two, and their numbers were way ahead of the Republican numbers. The one sitting county commissioner Chris Chermak, he's pretty popular. He hasn't made many enemies. And he won the top spot. He tried, and he brought across a running mate in the second slot, a woman named Diane Campbell, who's on the council in one of the towns in the Mid Valley, German. And she, but she trailed in by about 2,500 votes. So that, you know, it's.
So he's guaranteed to get elected, right? Because
yeah,
the way it works, the minority party gets one seat.
Right. So he's in. But he's going to remain the minority. I mean, the Democrat, he got about 5,000 some votes, and the Democrats each were in five-digit territory, 13,000, 12,000, something like that. So those races are, I think, pretty well set for the fall. And then, you know, in Scranton, you have the school board races.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to.
Right.
The school board is really, in terms of employment, as big a factor of government as the city government.
It's bigger.
Bigger even, right?
They have a big. They have a bigger budget, far bigger budget, and the bigger tax bill as well. And of course, part of that goes back to the fact that the state isn't funding everything that it should. Remember, the Scranton Times Tribune did an expose of that. Mm-hmm. What was it, $30 or $40 million short?
Yes,
something like that, which is huge.
Yes,
a huge amount, and they're not going to be making it all up at once, but they're going to be making it up.
And which has been responsible for all kinds of efforts to close schools in Scranton because they can't afford to keep them open.
Right. And that didn't sit well. They closed programs. They were closing schools. And they used an excuse that the state had come in and forced them to do it. And they finally got out of some of the state oversight. And some of the incumbents thought that they could run on that, saying, look, we've brought the finances back and we're doing much better. But the voters weren't quite having it. I believe three of the incumbents lost, one of them being a minority, Cruz, and it wasn't even that close. And of course, your old friend Tom Borthwick finally actually won a race.
Your predecessor, Tom. Yes. Borthwick used to do the show we're doing right now.
Yeah. He had run, I don't know how many times, three or four times. He'd been appointed twice to the school board, but could never get elected.
I think the teachers union opposed him every time.
Yeah, even though he was a teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though he was a teacher.
But his campaign was, we're not closing any schools.
Yeah.
We're not consolidating schools.
Yeah, and particularly the one school down in the Pine Brook section of Scranton, John Adams, where my mother used to teach. She taught preschool down there. And, you know, these are the communities that really need something in the neighborhood that anchors them. And they weren't getting it. You know, closing these schools is a big, it means you have to bus kids out of their neighborhood. They can't go home for lunch. The mothers can't, you know, come walk over to school to see what's happening, or the fathers can't do that. And, you know, that school was like the heart of that section of the city. And it has ramifications. And I think places where they have closed schools also had some effect. You know, people still resent that. People still resent that. Matter of fact, they ran into another problem. One of the schools, Robert Morse, they found asbestos, and they had to shut the school down.
Oh,
and it was a polling place, and they had to do the polling outside.
Wow.
Fortunately, the weather held for the primary, but that school is going to be shut down for the rest of the school year. And again, people don't like their having to move out of the neighborhoods. So that thing happened here. That's what happened here. We ought to mention also.
So let me ask you this. Yeah, in terms of all of this stuff in the state, does the relatively conservative Democratic victory in Philadelphia carry statewide significance?
Yes and no. You know, it's Philadelphia, which a lot of the state does not like. But it does have some significance, because if she is able to get control of the crime situation down there, getting more police, people feeling safer, then it takes that issue off the table for the Republicans. They can't keep pointing to it and saying, oh, look at Philadelphia. And let's face it, part of what they're referring to has racist overtones. You know, Philadelphia having a large black population. But Philadelphia also needs people to move into it. They've had some movement in, and now they've had some movement out. And that's important for the city, for its tax base, and for governmental benefits as well. So we'll see what Cheryl Parker is able to do down there as the new mayor.
So it's interesting. Philadelphia and New York have two similar mayors. On the other hand, Los Angeles and Chicago have two opposing to New York and Philadelphia, but similar to each other, mayors.
Right.
And all Democrats.
All Democrats.
It would be a very, very interesting matchup.
Yeah. We'll see, but you know, don't forget, every city has got a different characteristic. I think Chicago's in the worst shape of all of those cities.
Chicago may be in the worst shape of all those cities, but, you know, if you pay attention to actual statistics, the per capita crime rate in Chicago for that kind of street crime is not high. It's just that there are a lot of people in Chicago. But if you compare it to smaller cities, smaller towns, Republican-led cities and towns, almost all of them have higher crime rates per capita.
Yeah. Well, one of those, I believe, was Jacksonville, Florida.
Yep.
And lo and behold, another Republican stronghold for the last couple decades, and a Democrat won the election for mayor.
You know, in the face of DeSantis' endorsement.
Yes, that was a very that's a blow to DeSantis, because he's been going around the country saying, look at all these people that Donald Trump endorsed are losers. Well, lo and behold, now
he's 0 for 2, right? In this election, he's 0 for 2.
He's 0 for 2. And, you know, there was an election also in Kentucky there for the Republican gubernatorial candidate, and the Trump endorsed candidate won. We had that one. And then we had a vote in Colorado Springs, which is, although Colorado is trending blue, Colorado Springs is one of the reddest parts of the state. The Air Force Academy is there. It's got a religious-based populace. And a Democrat won there.
It seems to me every single right-wing evangelical political movement is headquartered in Colorado Springs. Maybe one is not, but most of them are.
Yeah. Well, anyway, a Democrat won there. And, you know, what this is kind of reminiscent of, and it's not fully clear, but it's reminiscent of what happened in 93 and 2000. What year would it have been? 2017. You know, in 93, where the Democrats had held the U.S. House of Representatives for decades, you started seeing in special elections, and you started seeing in other elections, Republicans winning where they had never won before, or not won in a long time. I remember there was a congressman in Kentucky, an elderly one who died, and to replace him, a Democrat, and the Republican won. In 2017, after the Trump victory, they had the elections that happened in Virginia and I think it was New Jersey, and the Democrats came back and won fairly convincingly. Now we're starting to see again Democrats winning in places where things were being contested or where Republicans had some strongholds. The test that we talked about, the abortion issue, is still there. And the safe schools, the firearms, is still there. And what it's looking like is DeSantis, who's, you know, this culture warrior, isn't playing that well outside of Florida. And you're hearing grumblings from Florida about all the things that DeSantis is doing. You know, this week we found out that his war with Disney, he's losing that war. Disney came out and said, okay, wise guy, you're trying to beat up on us because we took a principled stand, and so we were going to move 2,000 jobs and put $1 billion into a new complex in the heart of Florida, and that's not happening anymore. These jobs paid over $100,000 a year, and then we had the revelation that he had moved state money, investment money, from basically these ETF-type funds, where you don't have to have high fees, to these speculative, to this group that does much more speculative investing and gets higher fees. And of course, lo and behold, these are folks that were his political supporters.
And paying for his airplane that allows him to carry out his campaign.
Which he got the legislature to say people couldn't get those records.
Right. And he also got the legislature to pass a law that said he didn't have to resign as governor to run, whereas right. Previously, had he wanted to run for president, he would have had to resign as governor.
Right. Right. And he's going to jump into the race this week. Tim Scott's going to jump in the race this week.
I don't know. I think Tim Tebow will jump in the race, but he may fall to the bottom like a lead weight.
Well, Trump is on TV in certain areas, and my part of Pennsylvania up here is one of them, with these anti-DeSantis ads. One goes against against DeSantis on Social Security and Medicare, where, you know, they said DeSantis wants to take, you know, cut that. And the other ad goes to DeSantis putting in all these little taxes because he's trying to keep other taxes low. And, he's really hitting. He calls him DeTaxes instead of DeSantis. So, DeSantis's campaign may be, you know, dead before it's born, so to speak. But we'll see.
And I see now that DeSantis is, his wife is being attacked for being controlling. And they say that she may be his best asset. She may be, at the same time, his biggest weakness.
Sounds like Ginny Thomas.
Sounds like Ginny Thomas. But the attacks from the right, by the way, these are attacks from the right, are exactly the same kind of attacks you heard about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. You're not going to hear Democrats going after wives or women.
No.
So
I have nothing for whatever DeSantis is, Kathy DeSantis, something like that. But it's interesting that these misogynists, they can't help themselves. It doesn't matter what party a woman may be active in, they're going to go after her.
Right. That's one of the consistencies. And that's one of the things that that Ruth Ben-Ghiat, that I always quote, talks about the fascists and the authoritarians. Misogyny is a key factor in their appeal, so to speak.
Well, and sexual predatory qualities. I mean, Mussolini, the father of fascism, was famous for his misogyny, for his hatred of women, and at the same time, his exploitation of women.
Yep. So, we're back to Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, right.
Well, look at that. You know, the day after he was found liable for sexual abuse, can't say guilty, it wasn't a criminal case, but he's on television abusing that woman again. And people were applauding him. The Republicans in that town hall were applauding him,
right,
from New Hampshire. That's the nature of the party. As my wife would say, it's sick. It's sick.
That's what made America great, let's face it. Slavery and misogyny, it made America great.
Did you hear that comment from Neil Gorsuch? There was a case that was dismissed because the emergency for COVID was is no longer. And he said this was the greatest peacetime deprivation of people's rights, what they did during the COVID vaccine, masks and closing places up. And he didn't have to write that. Nobody else wrote any opinion. He opened his mouth on that, and quickly people reminded him that there was a thing called slavery.
Right.
You know, right. Of course, only a right-wing white man could overlook that sort of thing.
Well, what do you see coming up this coming week?
Well, like I said, there's going to be two or three Republicans jumping in the race. DeSantis, Tim Scott, and maybe Chris Christie at this time. And they're all going to be different, and none of them really have that much of a chance unless Trump, totally implodes. And, they're going to, we've got some indications from Georgia that they're going to come down with something in August. And they're still looking at things there, and of course the federal prosecutor is going after more things. He's got some of Trump's ex-attorneys possibly testifying or having to cut deals, and then in New York, Alvin Bragg is going after Alan
Whistleberg.
Again, for some perjury, and it's trying. Whistleberg wouldn't rat on Trump the last time, but they're going to put more pressure on him.
All right. But we'll see what happens next week. We're done this week.
We are.
So I'll see you next week.
All right. Have a good week.
You too.